It's the Burt Cohen Show. It's about America, right? But, you know, there's been a lot of power in America by one other country, one other state that's had tremendous power for a long time. And the rest of the world is looking at it and seeing that some of the effects of that might not be the best. And most of the world seems to think that that state, we're talking about the state of Israel, and Judaism are one and the same. Of course they are not. Our guest today is Rabbi Yisrael David Weiss, who is both Orthodox and anti-Zionist. Now, a recent poll in the New York Times showed 26% anti-Semitism, and Rabbi Weiss argues that the, quote, the Zionists bring danger upon the Jews. Today's discussion will focus on the rise of anti-Semitism as it relates to the world's equating Zionism with Judaism. Well, Rabbi Weiss, thank you so much for being with us. Your group, Neturei Karta International, says the ideology of Zionism and the ensuing establishment of the Zionist state conflicts with the basic teachings of Judaism.
Actually, I think we should just stop basically with Judaism, because Judaism is the religion that Zionism has reached itself onto, and the Judaism is thousands of years old. Zionism is a movement that started around 150 years ago or something, so it's a relatively very new movement in the course of history. Now, Judaism is one thing and one thing only. It's subservience to the Almighty, to accept the Almighty's rule over the whole world. The Jewish people made a covenant with God on Mount Sinai around 3,000 years ago to uphold his Torah, 613 commandments, people like basically the Old Testament and so forth. It's the Jewish religion. We believe that every human being has to serve God and believe in uphold seven commandments. It's called the Seven Commandments of Noah, which is to believe in one God, not serve idol worshiping, not to kill, not to steal, mm-hmm. not to commit adultery, to have a court system. There's seven commandments of Noah. But if people follow these rules, uphold these rules, believe in God, they will inherit the world to come. That's the basics of Jewish teachings. You don't have to be Jewish to inherit the world to come. But Jews made a covenant to uphold 613 commandments. And that is what the Jewish religion is. Nothing else. And Zionism started around 150 years ago, and it's a transformation from this covenant, from this subservience to God, into a base nationalism, a base concept of a material concept of like a shell, you might say, the mm-hmm. outer shell, just the appearance of Judaism they are using. In other words, they've usurped, hijacked the Jewish symbols, the Star of David, the menorah, different Jewish symbols, even the name Israel, the state of Israel. Israel was Jacob in the Bible. But it's a total contradiction. It is a transformation from subservience to God to excluding God from the equation in its essence. In other words, you don't have to be a religious person to be a Zionist. Zionism is a nationalist and Muslims have a land, an army, an Olympic team, and they, in order to gain credence, in order to gain legitimacy, they use the Bible, they wave the Bible as a deed to the land and claim that it's godly given to them and it's a godly issue of having this nationalism. So this is totally corrupt. It is totally false. It is a criminal thing what they're doing, and they're doing it in my name, in the name of the Jewish religion, and the rabbinical authorities from day one, when Zionism started, were outraged and spoke up in the most vehement and vocal opposition to this whole issue, and said that they're abusing and misusing, misrepresenting what we are and what Judaism is. Now, we have a book, in fact, that we put out on our site, which is www.nkusa. That's the Neturei character, nkusa.org. And in that site, you'll be able to see we have a book called The Rabbis Speak Out. It's a compilation of universally all the rabbinical authorities around the world spoke up in opposition to this whole issue of Zionism. Now, let me say that Zionism is, in every facet, it is contradictory to what Judaism is, because Judaism, as I said, and the basic essence of the issue is subservience to God. Zionism claims to be a democracy, you can do what you want, and it's a base nationalism, however you translate if it's democracy or not, because, of course, democracy is very troublesome in regard to people of the Muslim faith. And
yes,
so
forth.
But
for sure.
Beside that, in three basic issues I'd like just to touch on so that people should understand, the ideology, as I say, it's contradictory to Judaism. In the actual carrying out of this philosophy, which was the creation of the State of Israel, which is the completion of this ideology of Zionism, that they should have a piece of land, a state.
Right.
When they create this, they are rebelling against a direct commandments of God, that God put the Jewish people under oath that when we were sent into exile around 2,000 years, because the Jews, when they took the Torah and made this covenant around 3,000 years ago, then they went into the Holy Land, and then they had prophets, which everybody recognizes, people who study the Old Testament and the Holy Books. There's the Isaiah, Ezekiel, Jeremiah. All these prophets warned the Jews that that they will be sent into exile if they're not on that high level that they have to be. Eventually, there was the Jewish people built the temple. King Solomon built the temple to serve God in Jerusalem, what the Muslim people would call in Al-Quds, Jerusalem. And then this was eventually destroyed, we believe, because of a punishment from God to the Jewish people, and the Jewish people were dispersed throughout the world. When the Jewish people were dispersed throughout the world, there was a prophecy from King Solomon that expressly commanded the Jewish people that they are forbidden to make any attempt to return en masse to the Holy Land, because they were taken into captivity to Rome, and they were dispersed throughout the diaspora. And then they were put under oath by God. King Solomon saw this in a prophecy, and he said, when you are being dispersed and spread out throughout the nations, you are not to return en masse in large numbers. That is one oath of God. Mm. Then there were three oaths. The second oath is that we should not rebel against any nation. We have to be loyal citizens in every country we reside. And thirdly, not to make any attempts to end exile. Now, so that would forbid us to make even one inch of Jewish sovereignty any part of the world, because we're not allowed to rebel, because we're in exile, decreed exile of God, by God. And the concept of making this this homeland in the Holy Land, this breaches all three oaths, because they're returning en masse in large numbers and trying to convince Jews to make what they call Aliyah,
right,
go up into the Holy Land. And they call it Eschalta de Geula, beginning of redemption, which flies in the face of what God said, that we should not attempt to leave exile. And they are rebelling against the nations, against the people, the indigenous population. So in every facet, they're rebelling against God, besides which we were commanded not to even make one inch of Jewish sovereignty. So any place in the world, we would not accept it. But certainly, we do not accept this so-called Jewish state in the Holy Land, and therefore the rabbinical authorities opposed it from day one. Now, it gets compounded, this terrible crime, because being that it wasn't inhabited by a people,
right,
this land, so now we are trespassing upon the rights of the people that were living there, unfortunately murdering, bloodshed, and stealing their properties, and stealing their whole self-rule. And, so all the repercussions and all this terrible, tragic result of this creation of the state of Israel, all of this is not the will of God, but the rebellion direct against God. And therefore, if you will go to any part of the world, invariably, the more the religious the community, you will find that the more they are religious or Jew, they oppose the existence of the state of Israel. If you come to New York and you go right across Manhattan, is Williamsburg. It's the most religious Jewish area, a concentration of religious Jewish area. It's a beautiful, large community, and there is not one Israeli flag. If you go to in London, it's called Stamford Hills. That's where the most religious Jewish area there, and it's almost impossible to find an Israeli flag. And the same thing in Mea Shearim, in the Jewish most religious area, and so forth and so on. In Montreal, Bois-Croyant, in Canada, these are Jewish areas and Jewish enclaves. You will find that invariably, because they're more religious, they oppose the existence. They go in the footsteps and the path that we were taught, as the rabbis taught us. And as, like I say, you can find in the book, The Rabbis Speak Out, on our site, www.nkusa.org. You will find that we have opposed, we always will oppose this existence, the mere existence of the state of Israel. It is forbidden for us in every manner.
Well, I find it very interesting. We have a new rabbi here in Portsmouth, New Hampshire, from where the show is coming. And I noticed just recently he had a lapel pin that had the American flag and the Zionist flag on there. And I thought, wait a minute, aren't we supposed to be citizens of where we are? And I remember growing up in the 50s and early 60s, Rabbi Weiss, that we as kids were told, a people without a country, a people without a land, and there's a land without people, meaning what is now the state of Israel. And, of course, there were people there. And, you know, it seems to me, you're right. I mean, obviously, Judaism has been around for thousands of years, and nationalism only comes out of the late 19th century. It's a European thinking, nationalism, that, you know, Europeans could ignore whoever was there in the United States, ignore the Native Americans that were there, ignore the Arabs in what is now Israel, and the Africans. You know, if the Europeans wanted to live there, we formed nationalism, which, of course, led to the First World War. And I want to ask Rabbi Weiss, throughout the centuries of diaspora, Jews living across the world, settling in many places, we have taken our identities as Jews with us. Is there something about needing a chunk of real estate to maintain that identity? Rabbi Weiss, is there something in the Torah which suggests, or perhaps even commands, that it's important for Jews to be citizens where we are?
Yes. On both issues, I was understanding two opposing issues. We are commanded to pray. It's a special commandment of Jews that they have to pray. We have to pray for the well-being in the land where we are, and for the leaders. And we say these prayers in our high holy days, and in certain synagogues have these prayers. It's printed in the Siddurim, the prayer books, praying for the current leaders of the land. This is a requirement of Judaism. And on the flip side, we are not to have our even one inch of Jewish sovereignty. And you'll find that, as one of my colleagues, Rabbi Cohen from Manchester, he should have long, healthy years, he always stresses, he says, if this would be such an beautiful or some type of a good issue for the Jewish people to create the land. We've had a history of over 2,000 years. We've gone through trials and tribulations. We've gone through the Crusades and the Inquisition, Spanish Inquisition, and we've gone through so much. And there was a golden age of Judaism with Jews. There were certain times where Jews had very wealthy people in their community, and they even approach their rabbis and ask them, maybe we buy a piece of land and just be free of all the troubles that we have. And the rabbi said, have patience. God is full of compassion. He sees, but he forbids us to create our own sovereignty anywhere on this world. And therefore, it was respected. And if it would be such a boon or something, a requirement for Judaism, or something that we should strive for, why wasn't it never done in this 2,000 years? You could have bought land. Now, again, the answer is very simple, because it is expressly forbidden. This was a given by the Jewish people. They respected and upheld the Torah and understood, as a Jew, what it means to be a Jew. A Jew does not mean real estate.
Right.
A Jew means to serve God. And unfortunately, and I mean, if anybody would like to just, you know, take the time and effort, and just let's look who the people, the Zionist leaders are. The Zionist leaders were Theodor Herzl, and you look at the first when they had in their Basel, Switzerland, who was sitting together there at their table when they had their first conventions, the conferences, and you'll see that they were almost all of them, almost to the last one, they didn't even cover their heads. They were non-religious. They were not practicing, and yet they have the audacity to preach in the name of Judaism and claim that they're speaking for God. You know, and ignoring that the leaders of the communities ostracized them all around the world, because they said you are basically rebelling against the Almighty, and it's not Judaism. If we said we wouldn't agree with it, but at least if they would just create their own movement and leave Judaism alone, and don't do it in the name of Judaism. Mm-hmm. Call it what you want. Call it some commune. Create Zionism. But how they dare to use the Star of David and the name Israel and wave the Bible and claim that anybody who opposes them, it's because they're anti-Semitic. That's another thing.
Right.
The reason they're doing this is a very simple issue, because this way they can gain the support of the Christian, evangelistic Christians, who they point to the Bible, and they get these, in fact, more numbers than Jews. They get these people to support them in their state, because they say, oh, God, the Christians say God gave the Jews, the children of Israel, the Holy Land that belongs to them. And they build on that. And they also build on trying to present this as a religious issue, a religious conflict between Muslims and Jews. Now, that is alone so repugnant, because, and really tragic, because the Jews, when they were being slaughtered by the Inquisition and other times throughout history, they ran and they were taken in Muslim countries. And you can look throughout history that we flourished as Jewish communities in Egypt, in Tunisia, in Morocco, in Yemen, in Iran, and all these lands that were Muslim lands, we flourished amongst them. We didn't have to have a United Nations or human rights groups to protect us. This is a fact of history. The cemeteries are there. Unfortunately, the communities are not there anymore, simply because, unfortunately, Zionism that was created a little over 100 years ago put Judaism into suspicion in the Muslim lands, and they created a rift between Jews and Muslims, that the Jews had to run away. And a lot of times, I mean, I don't want to make this confusing, but the Zionists were even implicated in putting bombs in synagogues. There's a book called Ben-Gurion Scandals from Iraq. There was a beautiful Jewish community there, and a person who was part of the Zionist movement wrote a book about he was part of the Zionist movement, and they were caught putting bombs in synagogues because they wanted to create terror, that the Jews should run away and move up to Palestine ultimately.
Hmm.
So what Zionism did was they have like a win-win situation. What they tried to do is create anti-Semitism, because they confuse Judaism with Zionism,
right.
And people confuse the two. So then every Jew is sort of guilty for whatever the Zionists do. And around the world, they exacerbate. I'm not saying there were never any anti-Semites before,
right.
During Zionism. But Zionism exacerbates and creates the factory of creating anti-Semitism throughout the world, because it's, like I say, considered one and the same, Judaism and Zionism. And therefore, Jews had to run away from Muslim lands, and the Zionists aided and abetted in that. They went up to Palestine, and of course, they're the root cause of this endless river of bloodshed. I have another book that we have. It's that we compiled. It's called Traditional Torah Opposition to Zionism. We have the historic documents we've compiled, and there's many, many. There's so much more than that. But in that book, we have like quotes both of the Zionists and of the Arab leaders, and we have of our chief rabbis. First of all, the chief rabbi of Palestine in 1947, that's a year before the United Nations ratified the State of Israel, the chief rabbi of Palestine pleaded with the United Nations, and he said, I'll just quote, and this is a declaration before the United Nations on July 16th, 1947, and I'll just quote one sentence. He said, "We furthermore wish to express our definite opposition to a Jewish state in any part of Palestine." This is Rabbi Yosef Tzvi Dushinsky, of blessed memory, and the chief rabbi of Palestine. Now, remember, when we're talking about a chief rabbi and a rabbinate, this is not to be confused with the Israeli rabbinate and their chief rabbis, because that's just a window dressing and a farce. Just like they call themselves Israel, they made a rabbinate, mm-hmm. and they made their chief rabbis. This is all in just in order to be able to condone and to legitimize, supposedly, all the crimes they're doing through a rabbinate. But we don't recognize their rabbinate. Until today, we have a rabbinate and a chief rabbi and people who are anti-Zionist, who were there from for hundreds of years. And so it was at that time, when Zionists tried to make their state, the chief rabbi was Rabbi Dushinsky, and he pleaded with the United Nations many times. It's in their records. You can look that up, and you'll find they have the records how he went and pleaded with the United Nations to free them of this Zionism and that they don't want to do so. Unfortunately, they were ignored. But then we have the Zionist writings themselves, and there's like three famous leaders I just wanted to mention. I said Theodor Herzl. He's, of course, the most famous one. He was the one who created, accepted as the creator of the State of Israel. And his own diary, he wrote that the solution to anti-Semitism, and I'm quoting him, is on page 14 of his own diary. He said, "The way to solve the problem of anti-Semitism is to speak to the head priest of Vienna, to get an appointment with the Pope, to make a mass conversion of all the Jews of Austria to Catholicism. It's done on Sunday in the middle of the day with music and pride publicly. We are the last generation that held on to the faith of our forefathers. The conversion will be in St. Stephen's Cathedral." And then he wrote in the paper, he announced that he's not circumcising his son. He detested so much the Jewish religion that he had, when Jews throughout history gave their lives to uphold circumcision, because we believe that's part of our basic covenant with God, our symbol of being servants to God, he went when he had all the freedom, and he went and he announced proudly he's not circumcising his son. He had one son, his name was Hans. Until the day he died, he didn't circumcise his son. Another leader is called Jabotinsky. Maybe you've heard the name Zev Jabotinsky.
He was
the head of the Zionists, the main part, the Likud, whatever these guys are called. Their like terrorist organization before mm-hmm. they made the state was called the Haganah. And the other, the competition was called the Irgun, Tzvirachi, and this was really basically led by Zev Jabotinsky. So he was also from the forefathers of Zionism. He was the mentor of Menachem Begin, one of the mm-hmm. prime ministers of Israel. Mm-hmm. So Zev Jabotinsky wrote in an article in the newspaper in Palestine, the newspaper was called Chadashos Haaretz, which is Hebrew for the news of the news of the land. Chadashos means the new news of the land. And he wrote there in October 22nd, 1919, he wrote, "In the national home, we will announce that those Jews who have on themselves the rust of exile, and they refuse to shave off their beards and earlocks," pay us, if you know pictures of religious, very sure. Jews have like the side locks on earlocks, it's called pay us. So they say, "In the national home," I'll repeat the sentence, "In the national home, we will announce that those Jews who have on themselves the rust of exile, and they refuse to shave off their beards and earlocks, will be second-class citizens and will not have the right to vote." So imagine that. It sounds like Nazis. In other words, if a Jew looks like the traditional Jew, then he shouldn't have the right to vote. So they clearly, amongst themselves, they detested the religion, and they were trying to really uproot the soul of Judaism, uproot from the Jewish people their connection to God. They wanted a new type of Jew, an ersatz mm-hmm. Judaism. And they simply incorporated a Judaism for convenience sake to legitimize to the world their occupation of a land, but it has really nothing to do with the religion. It's contradictory. And we are very upset. We are frustrated because we cry. Our hearts cry with the suffering of the Palestinian people. We look on as so many years go by, and the world saw Jewish suffering, and they sympathize with the Jewish suffering, and therefore they try to assist and build up and support and buttress this state of Israel, when in truth, it's the root cause of bloodshed of Jews and non-Jews. It's the it's continuation of an ongoing, just creating a deeper and deeper rift between us and the Muslim world. Yes. And there's so much, such tragedy, and the Palestinian people are just endlessly suffering over 65 years, 66 years now. And, you know, I keep on, I'm not stressing enough the issue of the Palestinian people. Right. Because that is something which people, the reason is I feel, because people see that suffering in a manner, but they don't know the behind the scenes, the falseness of Zionism. But of course, the Zionism, the terrible occupation, the terrible, the endless suffering of the Palestinian people in Gaza and in the refugee camps throughout the world, and you know, Jordan and Lebanon and all, there's such terrible, terrible ongoing tragedy for millions of people. It's just, heartrending, and we feel with them. We embrace the suffering of the Palestinian people. We try to educate the world that they should really step back and understand what the problem is, what the solution could be if you understand the problem. And the problem is not to build up and supposedly that helps cement a Jewish state, because that's just cementing the problem. The solution is to remove the impediment to peace, the state of Israel, so Jews can live together again with the Arab neighbors.
As they did certainly before the creation of the state of Israel. And isn't there something about that as part of the Jewish identity, there's the Jewish ethic that the Jewish people are forbidden to oppress another people? Is that correct? Isn't it in our basic code of ethics?
Of course. In fact, the Torah is split basically into two issues. The commandments that have to deal with between God and the Jewish people and the Creator, for instance, to keep the Sabbath, to keep kosher. These issues are, you know, to do with commandments that we have to do between us and our Maker, the Almighty. And then the commandments that Torah is, like you can say, almost split in two about. The other issues is about how one has to live together with the other human beings. In fact, there's a very famous saying in the words of our sages that says, you should emulate God. Mahu rachum afatate rachum. Just as God is compassionate, you should be compassionate. And we live and teach our children from as soon as they be able to comprehend, we teach them that you're not allowed to steal a sheaf of paper, and it was something less than the value of a penny. And from a Jew or non-Jew, it doesn't matter. It's no different. And in fact, a lot of times when it has to do with people who are not from our community, making we call a chilul Hashem. It is desecrating God's name, because people look at us, and we are supposed to emulate God, because we're people of the book. We're supposed to have a covenant to serve God with holiness. And here, if we tell our children, look, if you're acting improperly, what you're doing is desecrating the name of God. We're carrying God's name. By the way we dress, we're showing that we're religious people. And we always teach our children that. It's ingrained in the education. So, of course, we're not allowed to harm other people. And, you know, we have to, I can even have to really add on to that issue, what you're saying. Because we have a special commandment also to show gratitude for the good that has been done for us. That's a special requirement in the Torah. And I don't know, there's not really time much to expand on that, but the Torah, we teach this to our children as soon as they learn education. In fact, it says Moses, when God, there was the ten plagues in Egypt, when that God smit the Egyptians. So the first one was with blood, that all the water turned to blood. And it says that God told Moses to take his staff and to strike the water, and it will turn into blood. And Moses said that when he was a baby, the king of Egypt said that all Jewish babies, male babies, should be slaughtered, and he bathed in them blood. So his mother and sister took Moses, and they hid him in the water in a wicker basket. Mm-hmm. also, he said, being that I was saved by being hidden in the water, in the river, therefore, it wouldn't be proper for me to smite the water, because we have to show gratitude. And this is how we teach our children. So his brother Aaron did it. And that is just how basically we teach our children, not only for human beings, but even for water, we're not allowed. We have to show gratitude. So, and it's certainly, most certainly for human beings, and I could go on and on with the Torah, how the Torah tells us that we should, even the Egyptians, we were not to do bad to them, because they were, at the end of the day, they provided a home for hundreds of years for the Jewish people, even though they enslaved them. So this is the way Judaism teaches. So of course we're not allowed to do bad to them, and we have to, on the contrary, we have to show gratitude. So for the Muslim nations that provided for us a safe haven for these hundreds of years, I'm not saying it was always perfect, you know, but we did have, we flourished and lived in the Muslim countries, and they were a gracious host for us as a general rule. And in fact, we have people today who are alive and living, both of Arab, Muslim, Arab Christian people and Jewish people in our communities, who remember the coexistence, the beautiful coexistence. They lived in the same courtyards in Jerusalem, in Palestine, and in many other towns and cities there, where they helped, they babysat each other's children. They lived in total harmony. So it is such a false picture that we have this rift, and there's a fight because of religion. There was three people living together, Jews, Christians, and Muslims, for hundreds and hundreds of years. And then along came a movement of a foreign body called Zionism. And it was like, it's Alka-Seltzer that you throw into a glass, and it made it, you know, bubble and explode. So the Zionism is a foreign object that has been removed, this foreign object, and God helped to, you know, peacefully remove it. And then we can once again coexist. So it's really the new neighbor to the block that's the problem. But the world has been calmed, like you say. You've been grown up with the mantra, because Zionism started before there were telephones with cameras, before there were basically telephones almost, you know. Yes. And Zionism sold the world that it was a land without a people, for a people without a land, and that there was some nomad, Arab nomads, who just hated the Jews, and that's how they had the mic for like 40 years, and they had the microphone in their hand, and they were able to sell the bill of goods, and then they built on the suffering of the Jews in the Holocaust to make a guilt ride of the people that Jews suffered, and everybody was silent. So therefore, they should support them by giving them this land that it says in the Bible is the Jews. This story is a beautifully made-up story, but it is totally, in every aspect, in every facet, it's flawed, it's selfish, it's criminal, it's a rebellion against God, it desecrates God's name, and it stains the Jewish people's name, and it brings bloodshed to non-Jews and Jews alike.
And I wanted to ask Rabbi Yisrael David Weiss, in 1948, as you mentioned, you know, it came as the direct result in reaction to the Holocaust. The United Nations created the State of Israel after the Zionist nationalists got started, 50 or so years before that, as a homeland for the Jews in Palestine. So in looking at history, World War II came about because of the unfinished business of the First World War. And I'm wondering, Israel exists as a result of what happened in the Second World War, which, of course, existed because of the First World War. So I wonder if somehow it's being carried forward, the identity of the Holocaust with Jews across the world. And, you know, isn't this something that, you know, rather than carrying it forward as part of our identity, that, you know, World War I was awful, it was terrible, World War II came about because of that. And, you know, the State of Israel came about because of that, as opposed to destroying all Jews in Western Europe, they move them out to a place, someplace else, some other people's land, and thus carrying, you know, a lot of this dynamic forward.
Yeah, you're asking, you've hit it on the head and nail. You're saying it's exactly the way you're saying, but there's so much more than that, because which the time I don't think would permit, but in our book, the traditional opposition to Zionism, the traditional Torah opposition to Zionism, historic documents, we find that even the issue of the Holocaust was Zionism was at least complacent, or they were implicated in actually working both with the Nazis. There's a book called 51 Documents from Lenny Brenner, and there's that they were implicated. You see, they wanted the Jews, the Zionists wanted the Jews to go up to Palestine. The Germans wanted the Jews out of Germany. And they worked together because it worked hand in hand. So they worked together, and it sounds very wild. But I'm going to just, and then when whatever was convenient for them, because being that they really are not, they don't have God's morals, so they're ready to sacrifice lives on the altar of Zionism to reach their goal. And therefore, we have they did sometimes contradictory things, but they really we have books of showing how they actually thwarted the efforts of saving Jews by World War II. And this is really jumping the gun a little bit. Let me go back to that. They worked together with the Nazis. The Nazis did not close when they closed all the Jewish newspapers, but the Zionist newspapers they left open. Hmm. And there's so much documents to show. Wow. And afterwards, there's one other issue. Afterwards, when there was meetings of other Zionists, I'm not saying all Zionists worked together with the Nazis, but as a general rule, that was their policy. And then they had another issue, that when the Jews were being killed, the Chaim Weizmann, who was the first president of Zionism, they detested so much the religious Jews that in 1938, and I'm quoting Chaim Weizmann, the first president, and this is, called the Jewish Press, a Zionist paper, October 18th, 02, but this quote is all over. And he had a meeting of the Zionists in 1938, this is what he wrote. He said, Palestine cannot absorb the Jews of Europe. We want only the best of Jewish youth to come to us. We want only the educated to enter Palestine for the purpose of increasing its culture. The other Jews will have to stay where they are and face whatever fate awaits them. These millions of Jews are dust on the wheels of history and may have to be blown away.
My.
Don't want them pouring into Palestine. We don't want Tel Aviv to become another low-grade ghetto. In other words, he's saying, let them all die. We don't want these type of Jews, these ghetto Jews, the ones who are religious like me. These Jews, let them die. So here they constantly vilify the world and, of course, the Muslims, and they declare them guilty of not saving the Jews when they were complacent, and they even supported efforts of saving Jews. There's a book called Menachem Meitzer, a book from Rabbi Weissmandel, who was almost successful in saving all the Hungarian Jews and a third of the Slovakian Jews, and he went and they just needed a lot of money. They made a deal with Eichmann to save the Jews and that they shouldn't be gassed in Auschwitz. My grandparents were killed in Auschwitz. They're from Hungary, and so they were killed in the last year, and they were almost saved because Rabbi Weissmandel from Nitra, was called the town called Nitra, a brilliant scholar and a great rabbi. He approached Eichmann secretly, and they made a deal that they'll buy the Jews and they won't kill them in Auschwitz. All the Jews are hungry. And he approached the Zionist organizations because they were very rich. And they said, sure, they'll help him. Behind the backs, they got his messages arrested. There's a book called Perfidy from Ben Hecht that speaks about this issue. So basically, so they're implicated in all this issue of the Holocaust. And then they take this Holocaust, that they have such dirty hands in the issue of the Holocaust, and they use it as a business in order to be able to gain support. And as you say, that it should never be forgotten. And that is the way they always... they're the only ones who are reaping good from the Holocaust, because they use this constantly to remind people that they should be supported. But in truth, it's so ironic and so tragic, because they had a hand and were implicated in so much suffering and death of the Jews there, as I quoted the first president, Chaim Weizmann. Mm-hmm. And like you said, and it really, the Holocaust is first of all disdained and looked at with such such bitterness by the world, because the Zionists are using it to oppress the people, and it doesn't bring to peace. My communities, my grandparents were killed in Auschwitz, so many of my majority of my relatives were killed there from both my parents' side, and yet we live with the Holocaust. We do as we say our prayers for the dead, and we try to be introspective, what God wanted of us from this Holocaust and so forth, but we don't use this as a tool to oppress other people and take a land and to make it live on and to perpetuate this issue that is just continuing to create anti-Semitism. It's totally wrong.
Yes.
You know, I mean, it is, of course, the Holocaust should be remembered by the world that, you know, that they should not commit genocide against other people and so forth, but not the way the Zionists use it.
Interesting. We're talking on the Bert Cohen Show with Rabbi Yisrael David Weiss, who is with Neturei Karta International, about how Zionism is not Judaism and how Zionism hurts Jews across the world. Now, we've all heard it said, I'm sure you have too, Rabbi Weiss, that Jews who are critical of the policies of the State of Israel are called self-hating Jews. Have you heard that?
I'm sure you're smiling when you're asking that question. That, of course, you know, that they have their ploy is using the word anti-Semitism against anybody who dares speak up against Zionism. In fact, that's why they always stress that it's called the Jewish state. They hate when you say the state of Israel, the Zionist state. They insist that it's referred to as the Jewish state. So when people say the Jews and the Jewish state, right away they're implicated in being anti-Semites. And the Jewish people stand up and say, hey, not in my name, and, you know, what are you, you know, this is, so, right, oh, you're a self-hating Jew. Now, I'd like to understand, a self-hating Jew, we have, we are the ones who are practicing the religion, the vast majority of these supposedly loving each other Jews don't keep even the Ten Commandments of God, of the Sabbath and so forth. They don't teach their children the education. They're getting totally assimilated and losing their Jewish identity. They intermarry totally. They're just totally falling away from the godliness, from their what they are, that they're Jews. No, you know, they're losing their identity in its entirety. We in our communities, I'm very proud to say, have the most greatest charitable organizations. We go visit the hospitals. It's called Bikur Cholim. That visits all the hospitals. It's very famous. We supply kosher food to go from bed to bed. It could be Muslim, Jewish, whoever needs assistance. We have lending organizations, free loan societies. We created Hatzolah. Hatzolah is an organization that is and it's spread out through the whole world, where if anybody needs an ambulatory service without any charge, they're there in a second. And this is throughout New York, and it's for anybody who calls. And it was created by us, by the non-Zionist Jews from Williamsburg. And so, you know, how dare they say we're self-hating Jews? But that's, you know, that's just, it's water off the, you know, because this is, anybody really, again, wants to study it. But they intimidate people. It's a fact that they do intimidate people when they say that, but we know what it's all about.
Yeah, and certainly during America's war in Vietnam, there were lots of us who criticized American policy in Vietnam. That did not mean we were self-hating Americans. We wanted some, you know,
have different opinions.
Absolutely.
Of course, that's what, you know, everybody understood that. That's what in democracy is, that there's different people who have, you know, everybody's looking for what's best. And you know, but like the accusations, you know, it's just a ploy. It's just a ploy. What they do is their mode of attack is to vilify the victim. You know, and that's why, again, let's say in Gaza, when they had the people of Gaza, we went to visit the people in Gaza. We saw their suffering. We brought them an ambulance. We embraced them. We went to visit the orphanages and the sick. And then they said, and we could check. You can see on our site we meet with many Muslim leaders, and we, all of them. In fact, we don't, you know, we're apolitical, so it could be Shia, Sunni, you know, in Lebanon from Hezbollah is part of the government, and in Gaza was the Hamas leader, and we went and they made joint press conference, but they said, we're not against Jews. We're against being occupied. We're not against Jews. We want to coexist. And this, of course, takes away the hatred, because the laymen over there, citizens over there, the people over there who had this intense hate for Jews, and thought that the more religious you are, the more they were their enemies. They all of a sudden, it totally disappeared, the hate, and they embraced us, and they realized that we're not the enemies, and who knows how many lives this saves, you know, and they don't. But the Zionists, you know, insist that they have, like, they weren't even satisfied when Hamas said that they will not put any more bombs, they're not going to attack. They refused to recognize the legitimacy of the state of Israel. And that wasn't good. So therefore, they were attacked again. And so I'm saying, is that right? And we don't recognize the existence of the state of Israel. It's totally wrong. And so you see that what they do is they vilify the victims. And of course, and this is going on for over 60 years. You look at our site again, and you'll see there's a lot of links, and you'll see pictures of how Jews are brutally beaten. Our leaders, our rabbis were killed, murdered by the Zionists, and our rabbis and our thousands of our my fellow Jewish constituents were beaten, arrested. Almost everybody who's a male who was over the 13 most probably, or maybe 15, was already arrested by the Zionists simply because they stood up, and we never militant, we don't carry arms. Because we spoke up our opposition, we made demonstrations. We have tens of thousands of Jews in Palestine, in the Holy Land, in Al-Quds, in Jerusalem, and in New York, and in London, all the world. We make demonstrations, and we're always threatened with our lives, but in the Holy Land, being that it's under the Zionist control, they brutally beat them.
Yeah.
And it doesn't even get shown in the world, not the large demonstrations that we make it both in New York and not what's happening in the Holy Land, yet it happens. Tens of thousands of Jews demonstrate, and it doesn't get shown how they're brutally beaten over there and arrested. And this is an ongoing phenomenon.
Well, and I understand in Israeli politics today, the occupation is absent. It's just become not even second nature, just part of the nature of the Zionist state. And there's a group called Breaking the Silence that some people have called traitors. These Breaking of Silence is a non-governmental organization, which reminds me of the Winter Soldier hearings in 1971 by American soldiers who saw atrocities being done in Vietnam, and they spoke out about it. And they tell stories often, very, very often, about the use of torture in either the occupied territories or the state of Israel itself. I would think that this would be getting stronger. And the fact is, as you mentioned, Rabbi Weiss, that religious Jews in the modern state of Israel are very much oppressed. It's not happening. So is there a linkage with Breaking the Silence? Do you see some forward movement going on among Jews across the world to differentiate Judaism from Zionism?
Well, we're coming from the Torah view, in other words, to show that the root issue, the concept of using Judaism, is false, and that our Torah does not permit us, because we believe what's called human rights is by us godliness. So we're coming from the godly view that our whole life is encompassed by the Torah and serving God, and we're not allowed to steal and kill. So we come from the Torah angle. Now the other groups, we go together in demonstrations with Palestinians and so forth, but the other human rights groups, there are many, there are, thank God, many,
sure.
And there's many ones who are involved with other Jewish people. We meet them at these demonstrations and so forth. And thank God, I would say, there's always been a Jewish presence and opposition, and there and a lot of times, I believe it's, thank God, it is growing, like you're saying, because the world is becoming aware of the Jewish youth. That was always brainwashed, and from the Zionist propaganda. That's because they had the endless wells of money, and they had the best PR systems. But now there's with the alternative media, with the internet, the world is becoming aware, and the Jewish youth is becoming aware. So there's much opposition. Again, on our site nkusa.org, there's links. You can see much of the from the religious. The opposition. You could see that is there, and you can see our demonstrations where there is, of course, human rights groups were joining together in marches and so forth. That's happening. That when we join Palestinian people and so forth, you'll find other groups. So always, work together. But it's really something that people should see and understand. I would beg people to step back and really just not be intimidated, and just look, if you step back for one second out of the narrative that is being presented in the mainstream media, because, like, in the mainstream media, whether it's the New York Times or the Washington Post, they, for some reason, it's a very odd issue, but they don't show our tens of thousands of Jews demonstrating. They don't show. And if anything, the other many of the newspapers, when they do show anything of us, they ridicule us or as some extreme people, even though with a basic religion. And around the world, these are communities. We're talking about hundreds of thousands of Jews. These communities are distinguished and accepted and do every type of business in that manner. And yet they're there, and so they're not extreme. And all of a sudden, when they basically ridicule, as I say, and they. This is the way the system, and they dismiss us, and that's the system of getting their that they shouldn't see what we're doing. So we plead with the world to step back and see the truth, that it is totally diametrically opposite and is antithetical to Judaism, this whole occupation, and that we plead with the world that, first of all, pray to the Almighty for a total and, God help, speedy and peaceful dismantlement of the state. And to stand up just as we did. We went to Gaza. We went to see the suffering of the Palestinian people. And every day that goes by, they're totally, emotionally and physically, they're crippled. So many of them because of what's happening to them. And they're in refugee camps for over 60 years.
Terrible torture.
To do for them, and that will bring peace. If you approach it properly and you understand the problem, that it's not a religious issue, then we can, again, bring peace so we can serve God together in peace and harmony.
So perhaps it looks like a two-state solution is less and less likely these days. It seems kind of out of reach. I wonder if the best answer might be a secular state instead of a religious state with total equality for all citizens. It just seems. What do you see in an ideal as the fairest and most realistic solution?
Well, like I say, if a doctor, in order to prescribe a medication, has to know what the sickness is, or else he'll just destroy the patient with painkillers. Won't work. It just covers over the problem by constantly harping on that you need it, that it's a Jewish state, you have to have it, and they make like a two-state solution. We're always thankful for every inch that's returned to the Palestinian people, but we say that it will never be a long-term successful peace, even with one inch of the state of Israel, because in the Torah, and we believe God rules the world, and the Torah it says that why are you rebelling against God? It will not be successful. We can never accept even one inch of Jewish sovereignty, even if it would not harm the Palestinian people, because we believe ultimately one day God will make a metaphysical change. All the world, we pray for this, it will happen without any human intervention. There will be a metaphysical change. All the world will stop being atheist. Everybody will believe in God. And then we won't have to convince the Palestinian people or anybody that it's the rule of God. All people we believe will embrace in the high holidays, the Yosef Kulam HaGudech, all the nations will make one bond, then we will all go up and serve God. So that's what we look out ultimately for, the day when God will be in glory. But till that day comes, we're certain that if people will stop buying this bag of goods, this narrative of the Zionists, stand, and really understand that the world will stop buying with the narrative of the Zionists, understand, and see what the sickness is, that it is this foreign element. It's Zionism, because for hundreds of years we were coexisting. As I said, it's clear, that's the history. We were coexisting in the streets of Palestine, in the same courtyard. So therefore, we have to see what is the problem. The problem is this new issue of Zionism. Remove it, God help. Then, like you say, you call it a secular state, which has a solution. We look at it as whatever, because we're required to be loyal citizens in every country we reside,
yes,
and to pray and look for the good. Whatever the Palestinian populace would want for their type of government, whether it be a secular government, which most people we understand want that it should be a secular, or even if they want it to be a Muslim government, whatever they want, we as a Jew must accept it, and we have no problem. We lived under the Turkish rule, the Ottoman rule, for many,
absolutely,
many hundreds of years. This wasn't the problem. We as Jews have no problem with that. We can, it's part of our lives. We are taught and trained how to live and be good citizens, and we would be good citizens. It's no impediment to our practicing our religion and serving God. On the contrary, they respect and are told to respect us as Jewish people as practicing our religion. In fact, I can tell you, I went to Yemen, and they have a very stringent law against having alcohol. And the Jewish people are allowed to have alcohol because we need it for our religion.
Sure.
And there's many other such laws. So, you know, this is a fact. So we have no problem, however the Palestinian people want their rule, we would be loyal citizens to them. We would humbly ask them that they should forgive what has been done to them, and we feel that's the true approach. That it costs billions of dollars every year to support Zionist monstrosity, this terrible tumor, and they have to constantly build new weapons, Everybody knows. Instead of taking these billions of dollars as restitution for the Palestinian people, and the people of the state of Israel who feel unsafe because of what they've done crimes there to the Palestinians and interrogations or whatever, that they should move to Canada, move to the U.S. And how much billions of dollars would that cost? I'm not sure, but it would definitely be less than the endless amount of money that's thrown in, that's poured into this state. And the rest, and then we'd be able to create a land that we could coexist, because the leadership of the Palestinian people constantly say that they want to live in peace, and they have. Many of these leaders have lived, and I spoke to President Abbas, and I've spoken, and we were friendly with President Arafat, and we've spoken with Ismail Haniyeh, the Prime Minister. Many of these people had a history of living in the same town with Jews. They remember their own narratives of how anecdotes of how they lived together so peacefully, and they want to continue to live. So there's no real reason why we can't. That would be the solution. And it can be done, because Zionism lives because it's supported by these arms and so forth that's given to them, and the world, because the world is supporting it. So with God's help, like I said, we have to pray to God to bring a speedy and peaceful end to this, and we can and if the world would help and realize what the sickness is, then they could bring a solution, because it's very simple, really.
I've got to run. Thank you so much. Very informative history, Rabbi Israel David Weiss. The website is www.netureikarta.international. Thank you so much for being with us today. Very informative.
God bless. Thank you.
God bless you. Thank you.
First thing, the occupation started when Palestine was left brokenhearted. Hands down, you won't believe the way they laid their wrath on her. 6 feet under is where they left us. So bad, the way that they were killing us. Too bad, we're not afraid to die when bombs fall from the sky.
Can't explain.
I never thought that we were gonna lose so bad.
They're all insane.